Use meaningful, specific subject headers. On mailing lists, news groups, or web forums, the subject header is your golden opportunity to attract qualified experts' attention in around 50 characters or fewer. Don't waste it on babble like, "Please help me," let alone, "Please help me." Messages with subjects like that get discarded by reflex. Don't try to impress us with the depth of your anguish. Use the space for a super concise problem description instead. One good convention for subject headers, used by many tech support organizations, is object-deviation. The object part specifies what thing or group of things is having a problem, and the deviation part describes the deviation from expected behavior. Stupid. Help! Video doesn't work properly on my laptop. Smart. X.org 6.8.1 Misshapen mouse cursor. Fooware MV1005 Vid chipset. Smarter. X.org 6.8.1 Mouse cursor on Fooware MV1005 Vid chipset is misshapen. The process of writing an object-deviation description will help you organize your thinking about the problem in more detail. What is affected? Just the mouse cursor or other graphics too? Is this specific to the X.org version of X? To version 6.8.1? Is this specific to Fooware video chipsets? To model MV1005? A hacker who sees the result can immediately understand what it is that you are having a problem with and the problem you are having at a glance. More generally, imagine looking at the index of an archive of questions with just the subject lines showing. Make your subject line reflect your question well enough that the next person searching the archive with a question similar to yours will be able to follow the thread to an answer rather than posting the question again. If you ask a question in a reply, be sure to change the subject line to indicate that you're asking a question. A subject line that looks like RE test or RE new bug is less likely to attract useful amounts of attention. Also, pair quotation of previous messages to the minimum consistent with cluing in new readers. Do not simply hit reply to a list message in order to start an entirely new thread. This will limit your audience. Some mail readers, like Mutt, allow the user to sort by thread and then hide messages in a thread by folding the thread. Folks who do that will never see your message. Changing the subject is not sufficient. Mutt, and probably other email readers, looks at other information in the email's headers to assign it to a thread, not the subject line. Instead, start an entirely new email. On web forums, the rules of good practice are slightly different because messages are usually much more tightly bound to specific discussion threads and often invisible outside those threads. Changing the subject when asking a question in reply is not essential. Not all forums even allow separate subject lines on replies, and nearly nobody reads them when they do. However, asking a question in a reply is a dubious practice in itself, because it will only be seen by those who are watching this thread. So, unless you are sure you want to ask only the people currently active in the thread, start a new one. Make it easy to reply. Finishing your query with, "Please send your reply to," makes it quite unlikely you will get an answer. If you can't be bothered to take even the few seconds required to set up a correct reply to header in your mail agent, we can't be bothered to take even a few seconds to think about your problem. If your mail program doesn't permit this, get a better mail program. If your operating system doesn't support any email programs that permit this, get a better operating system. In web forums, asking for a reply by email is outright rude, unless you believe the information may be sensitive, and somebody will, for some unknown reason, let you, but not the whole forum, know it. If you want an email copy when somebody replies in the thread, request that the web forum send it. This feature is supported almost everywhere under options like watch this thread, send email on answers, etc. Write in clear, grammatical, correctly spelled language. We found by experience that people who are careless and sloppy writers are usually also careless and sloppy at thinking and coding. Often enough to bet on, anyway. Answering questions for careless and sloppy thinkers is not rewarding. We'd rather spend our time elsewhere. So expressing your question clearly and well is important. If you can't be bothered to do that, we can't be bothered to pay attention. Spend the extra effort to polish your language. It doesn't have to be stiff or formal. In fact, Hacker culture values informal, slangy, and humorous language used with precision. But it has to be precise. There has to be some indication that you're thinking and paying attention. Spell, punctuate, and capitalize correctly. Don't confuse its with its, loose with lose, or discreet with discreet. Don't type in all caps. This is read as shouting and considered rude. All smalls is only slightly less annoying, as it's difficult to read. Alan Cox can get away with it, but you can't. More generally, if you write like a semi-literate boob, you will very likely be ignored. So don't use instant messaging shortcuts. Spelling you as you makes you look like a semi-literate boob to save two entire keystrokes. Worse, writing like a script kiddie hacker is the absolute kiss of death and guarantees you will receive nothing but stony silence. Or, at best, a heaping helping of scorn and sarcasm in return. If you are asking questions in a forum that does not use your native language, you will get a limited amount of slack for spelling and grammar errors, but no extra slack at all for laziness. And yes, we can usually spot that difference. Also, unless you know what your respondents' languages are, write in English. Busy hackers tend to simply flush questions in languages they don't understand, and English is the working language of the internet. By writing in English, you minimize your chances that your question will be discarded unread. If you're writing in English, but it is a second language for you, it is good form to alert potential respondents to potential language difficulties and options for getting around them. Examples: English is not my native language. Please excuse typing errors. If you speak my language, please email PM me. I may need assistance translating my question. I am familiar with the technical terms, but some slang expressions and idioms are difficult for me. I've posted my question in my language and English. I'll be glad to translate responses if you only use one or the other. Send questions in accessible, standard formats. If you make your question artificially hard to read, it is more likely to be passed over in favor of one that isn't. So, send plain text email, not HTML. It's not hard to turn off HTML. MIME attachments are usually okay, but only if they are real content, such as an attached source file or patch, and not merely boilerplate generated by your mail client, such as another copy of your message. Don't send email in which entire paragraphs are simply multiply wrapped lines. This makes it too difficult to reply to just part of your message. Assume that your respondents will be reading mail on 80-character-wide text displays and set your line wrap accordingly to something less than 80. However, do not wrap data, such as log file dumps or session transcripts, at any fixed column width. Data should be included as is, so respondents can have confidence that they are seeing what you saw. Don't send MIME-quoted printable encoding to an English language forum. This encoding can be necessary when you're posting in a language ASCII doesn't cover, but many email agents don't support it. When they break, all those equal 20 glyphs scattered through the text are ugly and distracting, or may actively sabotage the semantics of your text. Never, ever expect hackers to be able to read closed proprietary document formats like Microsoft Word or Excel. Most hackers react to these about as well as you would to having a pile of steaming pig manure dumped on your doorstep. Even when they can cope, they resent having to do so. If you're sending email from a Windows machine, turn off Microsoft's problematic Smart Quotes feature from Tools, Autocorrect Options. Clear the Smart Quotes checkbox under Auto Format as you type. This is so you'll avoid sprinkling garbage characters through your email. In web forums, do not abuse smiley and HTML features when they are present. A smiley or two is usually okay, but colored, fancy text tends to make people think you are lame. Seriously overusing smileys and color and fonts will make you come off like a giggly teenage girl, which is not generally a good idea unless you are more interested in sex than answers. If you're using a graphical user interface mail client such as Netscape Messenger, MS Outlook, or their ilk, beware that it may violate these rules when used with its default settings. Most such clients have a menu-based View Source command. Use this on something in your sent mail folder, verifying sending of plain text without unnecessary attached crud. Be precise and informative about your problem. Describe the symptoms of your problem or bug carefully and clearly. Describe the environment in which it occurs, machine, OS, application, whatever. Provide your vendor's distribution and release level, e.g. Fedora Core 7, Slackware 9.1, etc. Describe the research you did to try and understand the problem before you asked the question. Describe the diagnostic steps you took to try and pin down the problem yourself before you asked the question. Describe any possibly relevant recent changes in your computer or software configuration. If at all possible, provide a way to reproduce the problem in a controlled environment. Do the best you can to anticipate the questions a hacker will ask and answer them in advance in your request for help. Giving hackers the ability to reproduce the problem in a controlled environment is especially important if you're reporting something you think is a bug in code. When you do this, your odds of getting a useful answer and the speed with which you are likely to get that answer both improve tremendously. Simon Tathan has written an excellent essay entitled How to Report Bugs Effectively. I strongly recommend that you read it. Volume is not precision. You need to be precise and informative. This end is not served by simply dumping huge volumes of code or data into a help request. If you have a large, complicated test case that is breaking a program, try to trim it and make it as small as possible. This is useful for at least three reasons. One, being seen to invest effort in simplifying the question makes it more likely you'll get an answer. Two, simplifying the question makes it more likely you'll get a useful answer. Three, in the process of refining your bug report, you may develop a fix or workaround yourself. Don't rush to claim that you have found a bug. When you are having problems with a piece of software, don't claim you have found a bug unless you are very, very sure of your ground. Hint: unless you can provide a source code patch that fixes the problem or a regression test against a previous version that demonstrates incorrect behavior, you are probably not sure enough. This applies to web pages and documentation too. If you have found a documentation bug, you should supply replacement text and which pages it should go on. Remember, there are many other users that are not experiencing your problem. Otherwise, you would have learned about it while reading the documentation and searching the web. You did do that before complaining, didn't you? This means that very probably it is you who are doing something wrong, not the software. The people who wrote the software work very hard to make it work as well as possible. If you claim you have found a bug, you'll be impugning their competence, which may offend some of them, even if you are correct. It's especially undiplomatic to yell bug in the subject line. When asking your question, it is best to write as though you assume you are doing something wrong, even if you are privately pretty sure you have found an actual bug. If there really is a bug, you will hear about it in the answer. Play it so the maintainers will want to apologize to you if the bug is real, rather than so that you will owe them an apology if you have messed up. Groveling is not a substitute for doing your homework. Some people who get that they shouldn't behave rudely or arrogantly, demanding an answer, retreat to the opposite extreme of groveling. I know I'm just a pathetic newbie loser, but this is distracting and unhelpful. It's especially annoying when it's coupled with vagueness about the actual problem. Don't waste your time or ours on crude primate politics. Instead, present the background facts and your question as clearly as you can. That is a better way to position yourself than by groveling. Sometimes web forums have separate places for newbie questions. If you feel you do have a newbie question, just go there. But don't grovel there either. Describe the problem's symptoms, not your guesses. It's not useful to tell hackers what you think is causing your problem. If your diagnostic theories were such hot stuff, would you be consulting others for help? So, make sure you're telling them the raw symptoms of what goes wrong, rather than your interpretations and theories. Let them do the interpretation and diagnosis. If you feel it's important to state your guess, clearly label it as such and describe why that answer isn't working for you. Stupid. I'm getting back-to-back SIG 11 errors on kernel compiles and suspect a hairline crack on one of the motherboard traces. What's the best way to check for those? Smart. My home-built K6233 on a FIC PA2007 motherboard via Apollo VP2 chipset with 256 megabytes of Corsair PC133 SD RAM starts getting frequent SIG 11 errors about 20 minutes after power on during the course of kernel compiles, but never in the first 20 minutes. Rebooting doesn't restart the clock, but powering down overnight does. Swapping out all RAM didn't help. The relevant part of a typical compile log session follows. Since the preceding point seems to be a tough one for many people to grasp, here's a phrase to remind you. All diagnosticians are from Missouri. That U.S. state's official motto is "Show Me," earned in 1899 when Congressman Willard D. Vandiver said, "I come from a country that raises corn and cotton and cockleburrs and Democrats, and frothy eloquence neither convinces nor satisfies me. I'm from Missouri. You've got to show me." In the diagnostician's case, it's not a matter of skepticism, but rather a literal, functional need to see whatever is as close as possible to the same raw evidence that you see, rather than your surmises and summaries. Show us. Describe your problem's symptoms in chronological order. The clues most useful in figuring out something that went wrong often lie in the events immediately prior. So, your account should describe precisely what you did and what the machine and software did, leading up to the blow-up. In the case of command line processes, having a session log, e.g. using the script utility, and quoting the relevant 20 or so lines is very useful. If the program that blew up on you has diagnostic options, such as -V for verbose, try to select options that will add useful debugging information to the transcript. Remember that more is not necessarily better. Try to choose a debug level that will inform rather than drowning the reader in junk. If your account ends up being long, more than about 4 paragraphs, it might be useful to succinctly state the problem up top, then follow with the chronological tale. That way, hackers will know what to watch for in reading your account. Describe the goal, not the step. If you're trying to find out how to do something, as opposed to reporting a bug, begin by describing the goal. Only then describe the particular step towards it that you are blocked on. Often, people who need technical help have a high-level goal in mind and get stuck on what they think is one particular path towards the goal. They come for help with the step, but don't realize that the path is wrong. It can take substantial effort to get past this. Stupid. How do I get the color picker on the foo draw program to take a hexadecimal RGB value? Smart. I'm trying to replace the color table on an image with values of my choosing. Right now, the only way I can see to do this is by editing each table slot, but I can't get FooDraw's color picker to take a hexadecimal RGB value. The second version of the question is smart. It allows an answer that suggests a tool better suited to the task. Don't ask people to reply by private email. Hackers believe solving problems should be a public, transparent process during which a first try at an answer can and should be corrected if someone more knowledgeable notices that it is incomplete or incorrect. Also, helpers get some of their reward for being respondents from being seen to be competent and knowledgeable by their peers. When you ask for a private reply, you are disrupting both the process and the reward. Don't do this. It's the respondent's choice whether to reply privately. And if he or she does, it's usually because he or she thinks the question is too ill-informed or obvious to be interesting to others. There is one limited exception to this rule. If you think the question is such that you are likely to get many answers that are all closely similar, then the magic words are, "Email me and I'll summarize the answers for the group." It is courteous to try and save the mailing list or news group a flood of substantially identical postings, but you have to keep the promise to summarize. Be explicit about your question. Open-ended questions tend to be perceived as open-ended time sinks. Those people most likely to be able to give you a useful answer are also the busiest people, if only because they take on the most work themselves. People like that are allergic to open-ended time sinks. Thus, they tend to be allergic to open-ended questions. You are more likely to get a useful response if you are explicit about what you want respondents to do. Provide pointers, send code, check your patch, whatever. This will focus their effort and implicitly put an upper bound on the time and energy a respondent must allocate to helping you. This is good. To understand the world the experts live in, think of expertise as an abundant resource and time to respond as a scarce one. The less of a time commitment you implicitly ask for, the more likely you are to get an answer from someone really good and really busy. So it is useful to frame your question to minimize the time commitment required for an expert to field it. But this is often not the same thing as simplifying the question. Thus, for example, "Would you give me a pointer to a good explanation of X?" is usually a smarter question than "Would you explain X, please?" If you have some malfunctioning code, it is usually smarter to ask for someone to explain what's wrong with it than it is to ask someone to fix it. When asking about code, don't ask others to debug your broken code without giving a hint what sort of problem they should be searching for. Posting a few hundred lines of code saying, "It doesn't work," will get you ignored. Posting a dozen lines of code saying, "After line 7, I was expecting to see X, but Y occurred instead," is much more likely to get you a response. The most effective way to be precise about a code problem is to provide a minimal bug demonstrating case. What's a minimal test case? It's an illustration of the problem. Just enough code to exhibit the undesirable behavior and no more. How do you make a minimal test case? If you know what line or section of code is producing the problematic behavior, make a copy of it and add just enough supporting code to produce a complete example, i.e., enough that the source code is acceptable to the compiler, interpreter, whatever application processes it. If you can't narrow it down to a particular section, make a copy of the source and start removing chunks that don't affect the problematic behavior. The smaller your minimal test case is, the better. See the section called Volume is Not Precision. Generating a really small minimal test case will not always be possible, but trying to is good discipline. It may help you learn what you need to solve the problem on your own, and even when it doesn't, hackers like to see that you have tried. It will make them more cooperative. If you simply want a code review, say as much up front, and be sure to mention what areas you think might particularly need review and why. Don't post homework questions. Hackers are good at spotting homework questions. Most of us have done them ourselves. Those questions are for you to work out so that you will learn from experience. It is okay to ask for hints, but not for entire solutions. If you suspect that you have been passed a homework question but can't solve it anyway, try asking in a user group forum or, as a last resort, in a user list forum of a project. While the hackers will spot it, some of the advanced users may at least give you a hint.